Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Nigeria's government says it is reaching out to Boko Haram after a new video surfaced online Sunday showing as many as 50 of the Chibok schoolgirls kidnapped in 2014. The militant group says several girls have died and they are demanding a prisoner swap for the rest. One of the abducted girls pleads in the video for the government to release detained militants so the girls can go free. More than 200 Chibok girls are still missing. Kurdish Peshmerga forces in Iraq, backed by U.S.-led airstrikes, have begun an operation to retake villages around Mosul from the Islamic militants.
The forces launched a fresh attack Sunday with heavy shelling. IS fighters returned fire with mortars and car bombs. So far, a Peshmerga commander says they've taken 11 villages from IS. The forces are targeting the town of Gwer, about 40 kilometers southeast of Mosul. From there, officials hope they can take back Mosul.
That was Nathan Frandino reporting. Iraq's leaders have promised to end the Islamic State's two-year control of Mosul this year. Thai police, the spokesperson with the department, said Sunday they know who was behind a recent series of deadly bombings and that at least one man has been detained for questioning. Police have been searching for those responsible for 11 small bomb attacks that killed four people and wounded dozens of others in several key tourist towns Thursday night and Friday morning. Police suspect someone with a political agenda is behind those attacks. This is VOA News. Tensions are running high in the central U.S. city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Sunday, after police shot and killed a man allegedly running from a traffic stop on Saturday. Following the shooting, an angry crowd threw rocks at police and set fires to businesses, injuring at least one police officer. The officer who shot the suspect is on administrative leave while the incident is under investigation. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is set to say Monday how he would combat Islamic terrorism, just days after claiming President Barack Obama and Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton founded the Islamic State militant group. Trump, after repeating the claim, later said he meant the remark as sarcasm. Meanwhile, Clinton is scheduled to campaign this week in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and North Carolina, where recent polls show her leading in each of those states. Hundreds of protesters braved heavy rains in the Philippines' capital Sunday, denouncing President Rodrigo Duterte's plan to honor the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos with a state burial in a hero's cemetery in Manila next month. Also among the protesters were victims of torture and imprisonment during Marcos' time in power and those who sympathized with them.
Hearing someone was a dictator and a torturer and who stole from us and they have not admitted to anything. How can we just sit back and in the memory of all those that died, that disappeared, how can we just let them do that?
President Duterte argues that Marcos deserves to be buried in the Heroes Cemetery as a former soldier and president. Police say the man who attacked passengers on a Swiss train with a knife and burning liquid has died of his wounds. A woman attacked during Saturday's rampage also died. Authorities say three others, including a six-year-old girl, remain in critical condition. Police are not sure if the man is linked to extremist groups. And in Rio Sunday, the world's fastest man, Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt, is going for his unprecedented third straight gold in the 100 meters, despite a sore hamstring.
I know it's a bit nerve-wracking, but I am awaiting his run because I know he'll be doing very good.
That was Bolt's mother, Jennifer Bolt. And on Saturday, American swimmer Michael Phelps grabbed another gold medal by swimming on the winning U.S. 4x100 medley. The U.S. women's 4x100 medley won gold also. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington. More news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
The Commission of Zambia has been recognized in the past as conducting credible elections.
Anxiety remains high in Zambia as voters wait anxiously for the result of the presidential poll.
It's part of our campaign strategies that's making sure that we feed children in school, in which I myself and the Vice President are always working very hard to make sure that they have started the feeding program.
The First Lady of Nigeria urges the U.S. and other Western nations to help women and children facing starvation in her country.
1,000 people were killed in Jokwe. And since this massacre, the Office of Prosecutor in the ICC did not anything about these victims.
And the victims of the massacre during the 2011 post-election violence in the Ivorian city of Dokwe demand justice. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Carter Center poll observer team monitoring the Zambia elections has called on citizens to be calm as the Electoral Commission releases the results of the polls. Anxiety remains reportedly high because the Electoral Commission slowly certifies the election result of the presidential election. Sylvie Kinigi, a former Prime Minister of Burundi and leader of the Carter Center poll monitoring group, told me her group encouraged the Electoral Commission of Zambia to be more transparent in its processes.
The Electoral Commission of Zambia has been recognized in the past as conducting credible elections. And the Carter Center welcomes and encourages the new positive steps taken by the Election Commission. During the meeting, we asked them to improve its credibility to all key electoral stakeholders by increasing transparency about its processes. But the release of results was extremely slow and fast. On announcement schedule. And given the apparent slowness in the counting and the verification process, it can affect the credibility of the ITVET.
Interacting with the officials of the Electoral Commission, did they say when the final presidential results will be declared?
By the moment, the results are coming slowly. And the observers have been at Mulungushi for the announcement of the results. And by now, over 80 constituencies have been already reported. And we hope that they will be tried to be more fast and be able to give the results as soon as possible, maybe today by night or tomorrow by the morning. What we recommend for that issue is that really the ECZ try to be efficient and expeditious as possible and try to make sure that the results are accurately reported. Because all the stakeholders, the leader of the parties, the civil society, even the local observer, really are now anxious to receive such results.
Did the Electoral Commission explain why there's so much delay in releasing the results, particularly of the presidential election?
No explanation is given. They show that they are working. They show that they are trying to give slowly the results by constituency. And if you watch to the television, as I told you, the political parties are observing in Mulungu Center. And the stakeholder, the civil society are there. So we think that they are doing their own activity, but really it is taking time.
The UPND is not happy. Do you think they have legitimate reasons not to be happy about the way the Electoral Commission is releasing the results?
Yeah, if you observe how was the environment during the pre-election campaign, where they have suffered for limited space to access to the media, when they have been trying to show the news that they are unhappy. Even now, they are showing that they are unhappy with the counting process.
Sylvie Kinigi is a former Prime Minister of Burundi and leader of the Carter Center Poll Monitoring Group. She spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. Aisha Buhari, the First Lady of Nigeria, is urging the U.S. and other Western nations to help women and children facing starvation in the northeastern part of Nigeria. Last week, she was in Washington, D.C., where she met with aid and relief organizations. Mrs. Buhari also stopped by the Voice of America and sat down with me for an interview. How does it feel to be the First Lady of Nigeria, the mother of the nation, as they call you?
Yeah, maybe before, it may sound exciting being the first lady, but when you are really into it, you know that it's very stressful. No more excitement, I think.
I know there's no official, you know, title or office,
yeah.
But how challenging is it?
Quite challenging. Without having any constitutional role to play, and people have been trooping in, complaining, left, right, and center, and there's nothing much you could do. It's quite, I don't know.
Well, you know how difficult it's been for Nigeria when it comes to Boko Haram, although significant achievements have been made when the military launched different offensives followed by instructions from your husband, Mr. President. Chibok girls were abducted. It's been over 2 years now. When you meet their parents, what do you tell them? As a mother, you know how it feels. What do you tell them?
It's quite emotional meeting them, and all of us are mothers. We feel their pain, and in the process of making them feel a bit comfortable before the girls will be rescued, I wrote my book 2 years before my husband came to power. I wanted to sell it and use the proceeds to establish a health farm. And because of what happened, and I feel for them, I decided to give the proceeds to make the parents feel a bit comfortable and also to show them how much we care for them.
I heard you have a passion of educating adults.
Yeah.
What efforts are you making to revive that?
Already we have Adult Education Commission. That's a government agency that's established mainly to take care of adult education or to educate adults. And we see that the root causes of all this crisis, you know, unrest is a lack of education. So that's why I'm now working with the agency and the Minister of Education to make sure that we revive the adult education centers that we used to have in villages. And I'm sure by the time we revive them, it will make a huge difference in the society.
What about the women empowerment in Nigeria? I know you're passionate about that, but what about it? How are you going about doing it?
Yeah, federal government has an agenda on that specifically. Through the Ministry of Women Affairs, they have, I think, over 1.3 billion or 1.7 billion naira to be given to women to empower them at different levels.
What about the girl child, child rights, abuses, among other issues?
Yeah, they're all there. I think it's part of our campaign strategies that's making sure that we feed children in school, in which I myself and the Vice President are always working very hard to make sure that and they have started the feeding program in schools to make sure that those that are in school should be retained. Those that are not enrolled should be enrolled. Even as a result of giving one hot meal in the school, to encourage them. Because they always used to be on the street, like from morning to evening, hawking, looking for what to eat. If they can be given a hot meal in the school, I think it will go a long way in retaining them in schools.
So how would you go about looking for funds to support them? Because everybody is complaining there are no money for anybody. How do you do that?
Yeah, there's no money, but if we can block the leakages that used to happen, we'll get a lot of money to do basic things. Not that we don't have the money. The money has been embezzled. But I think that's the end of embezzlement in Nigeria.
That was quite emphatic, an end of embezzlement in
of
Nigeria.
Course,
why do you say that? Why so confident last?
Yeah, because I know that this government was a collectively, the government of change, it was a collective effort government. So the people should continue monitoring the budgets of the ministries. Why a certain amount of money is budgeted for this, and it must carry out its activities based on what they have budgeted for. So people should continue monitoring.
What would be your message to Nigerians who have been complaining about policies that appear not to be, they say not to be working because they don't have money in their pockets, finally?
They don't have money in their pockets?
That's what they say.
I don't know. I'm not sure of that. I'm not a government official, but I think if people can stand up for their rights to make sure that the money budgeted for certain projects are being used for that purpose, I think it will bring the, an end of, what do you call it, corruption.
Thank you.
When we tackle corruption, I think our problems are solved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Aisha Buhari is the First Lady of Nigeria. She spoke with me from here in the VOA studios in the nation's capital. Peace and political stability appears to have returned to the West African country of Ivory Coast following the 2011 post-election crisis. The crisis left thousands of citizens dead and many more forced to flee into neighboring countries. During the crisis, about 1,000 citizens were massacred in Dokwe, a city in the country's western region. Habiba Touré, a France-based lawyer representing the surviving victims, told me the masterminds of the massacre must be held accountable for their actions.
You know, after the post-electoral crisis, 1,000 people were killed in Jokwe. And since this massacre, the Office of Prosecutor in the ICC did not anything about these victims. That's why the victims asked me to help them to convince the ICC to pursue the authors of the massacre.
You've met the ICC officials. What did they say about investigating and holding those responsible accountable to that?
They asked me to be patient. They told me they continue to investigate. But for my clients, it's unacceptable because it's been a long time, 5 years, and we cannot understand because for the President Gbagbo, it's just after 1 month after the beginning of the investigation, they transfer him in the ICC. So we cannot understand, after 5 years, they can't pursue anybody about the massacre of Jokwe. I think it was the greatest massacre in Ivory Coast, and nobody will be has been pursued, and it's unacceptable.
Mm. So did they tell you how long they're going to investigate this Dokwe massacre and when they think they will proceed with prosecution of those masterminds?
No. They just told me to be patient and they need more time for their investigation. But I think it's not serious. It's not serious.
You don't think they are serious?
No, I don't think it's serious because it's impossible to accept. You need just 1 month to transfer the President Gbagbo, 1 month. And after 5 years, you are not able to pursue the author of the massacre of Jokwe. And you have the report of non-governmental organization. Mm-hmm. And you have the survivor of the massacre, and they accept to attest about the massacre. And you say just be patient, we investigate. It's not acceptable. It's not serious.
Recently, we heard reports that in France, a warrant was issued against the Speaker of Parliament in Ivory Coast, Guillaume Soro. I heard you were behind it.
Yeah.
So you are a crusader now.
In fact, for this case, I represent Michel Gbagbo, the son of the President Gbagbo. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, in the end of the post-electoral crisis, he was arrested, beaten, humiliated. And it's not acceptable, too. So he wants just the justice. And because he's French and he doesn't confidence about the Ivorian justice, we filed against Guillaume Soro in France. So the judge asked to Guillaume Soro, to Mr. Guillaume Soro, to come just to answer some questions about this case. And he refused. That's why there is a warrant.
But some people are saying that you seem to have a political agenda against the Speaker of Parliament, and that is why you are basically persecuting him in international court, or for that matter in France. What do you say to that?
I said I'm a lawyer, not a politician woman. The day who I decide to be a politician woman, Guillaume Soro, we know this day. But now I'm just a lawyer, and I do my job.
What is the status of the case so far now? Now that there's a warrant against him, he might not necessarily be able to go to France, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Even though he has immunity?
He has not an immunity when he comes in France. If the French authority invite him, yes, there is no problem for him. But if he wants just to visit France, that he can be arrested. It's sure.
Hmm. So what is your client doing now, Mr. Michel Gbagbo? What is he doing now? Is he in France or has he returned to Ivory Coast?
Now he's in Ivory Coast. He cannot travel, you know, because Ivorian authority, I think they'll be afraid and they don't want to let him to come in France.
Habiba Touré is a France-based lawyer who represents victims of the Dioukoué massacre in Ivory Coast. She spoke with me from here in the VOA studios in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, Ivory Coast is headed for a constitutional referendum in October. President Alassane Ouattara backs the initiative, which would create a Senate and a new post of deputy president, but the opposition does not share his enthusiasm. For VOA, Emily Yub reports from the Ivorian commercial capital, Abidjan.
One of the main reasons to reform the current constitution, Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has said, is to remove a contentious article on nationality which played a role in years of civil war in a West African nation. Ouattara's political opponent used the article on nationality to block him from several presidential elections in the past, claiming his parents were not born in Ivory Coast and he was thus not eligible. The U.S.-trained economist was elected head of state in 2010 and took office the following year after months of unrest involving supporters of his predecessor as president, Laurent Gbagbo. Ivory Coast has kept his role as the world's leading producer of cocoa despite the civil war earlier in this decade, and Ouattara has since won re-election. He declared one of his main goals is to revise and update the constitution. The text of a new national charter has not yet been released, but when the president announced details of the plan change this month, creating a new post of deputy president and adding a Senate as a second legislative branch of the government, they immediately aroused controversy. The opposition denounced the president's proposal, saying it reflected a lack of national dialogue and consensus. Bamba Mori Ferré is the spokesperson of the CODE, the opposition coalition. When you're bringing a new constitution, all Ivorians should be part of the debate, he says. The president should follow international standards and establish a constitutional commission, Mori Ferré said. It'll take time, as much as needed, but there needs to be an in-depth debate. Ouattara shouldn't try to force his way through. The opposition spokesperson believes Ivory Coast's fragile social order is at stake. Ouattara said he wants the new constitution to establish the office of deputy president, since the office of the president needs to fill such a vacancy. The opposition claims his real agenda is to choose a successor. As for the Senate,
il nomme un tiers des sénateurs.
He wants to name one-third of the senators, Moïse claims. That's against the separation of powers. Civil society platform Poesie has recently run several small focus groups across the country.
Dans l'ensemble des avis recueillis,
spokesperson Marie-Paul Kodjo says most of those who participated believe the president's new constitution is not what Ivory Coast needs now. They believe priorities are elsewhere, she said, such as action to curb the rising cost of living, unemployment and corruption. Kodjo's group also emphasizes the need for a national consensus on the text of a new constitution and is against creating new institutions that could challenge the nation's existing order. This is necessary given the fragility of the social fabric and the need to rationalize the expenses granted to the governing body, Kodjo said. The civil society organization also asked the government to communicate better on the new text and to publish full details sooner than the minimum period requires before a national referendum, just 2 weeks prior to a vote due to take place in October. Emilia for VOA News in Abidjan.
Nigeria was set to celebrate its two-year anniversary of being polio-free when two children caught the disease and became paralyzed. The most populous nation in Africa now will begin a massive vaccination program on Monday in the hope of suppressing the virus completely. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on the challenge that lies ahead.
The polio virus has struck Nigeria again. It's the last country in Africa where this crippling virus exists. Now in the north, two children are paralyzed for life. The north is where Boko Haram militants have made vaccination campaigns dangerous. While polio workers feel let down, it means some children were missed. John Vertifay heads the Centers for Disease Control's polio program. He spoke by Skype.
This is disappointing. And yes, it will require an intensive response. But in fact, it is part of the process of looking very closely at the surveillance and making sure that nothing was missed, that sometimes these things do come up.
Just getting to this point took a massive effort by the Nigerian government and thousands of volunteers, supported by UN agencies, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, Rotary International, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Dr. Muhammad Ali Pate is from northern Nigeria. He works with the Duke University Global Health Institute, but continues to work to end polio in his home country. He says Nigeria's traditional leaders see the value of getting their children vaccinated against polio.
Shigeri Foundation, with support from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is continuing to work on community engagement through the Northern Traditional Leaders Committee on Primary Healthcare and Polio Eradication. And that will continue.
Nigeria's partners in polio eradication have redoubled their support to help the country end polio. They credit the Nigerian government for its commitment. Vertifay says the response from the government to this outbreak has been fast and strong.
The changes that have been made over the last couple of years in the polio program in Nigeria resulted in a very professional operation that is able to deliver this response.
While Nigeria has experienced a setback, the world is very close to eradicating polio. Just 4 years ago, Nigeria accounted for more than half of all polio cases in the world. Now, even with this latest disappointment, it's down to two. At one time, about 70 years ago, polio would kill or cripple a half million people a year. Only 23 cases have been reported worldwide so far in 2016. Most of those were in Pakistan or Afghanistan. Pate says the effort to end polio exemplifies what a global partnership can actually accomplish. The challenge is not to let this opportunity slip away. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Enjoy.
Girl, I'm drowning in your love. So baby, take it all. I know it's you, no turning back. Girl, I said it all. I don't care what people say about you. Don't care if they must spoil you for me. Because a la la bakuwa. I told you before that I wanna go far with you. Stop in a fit mess up too. Hasta me ma boo. Oh, my girl, tell me my no. Oh, no, go to Roma, no. Go nowhere. And if I want a baby from you, give me one. Oh, yes, yeah. Baby, oh, baby, oh, girl, I just want you to know. Another man bore you out, baby. No go chop another woman, no how. Feeling I'm feeling for you, baby, is awakening my soul. I will love you till nobody else see what they won't do for you. Why? Yeah, you no go regret. Nothing go make me forget. Only you are no good to share. Cause a good la la bakuwa. I told you before that I wanna go far with you. Stop in a fit mess up too. Pass on in my boot. You're not open to me, my no. Oh, no, go to Roma, no. Yeah, go to Boca, check, go nowhere. And if I want a baby from you, give me one. Oh, yes, yeah. Baby, oh, baby, oh, girl, I just want you to know.
But I'm sorry, yo. Yeah, digging over me. Oh, give me what up, no. As I see your sexy face and your baby belly. Girl, I have to change my ways, I tell you, yeah.
Me, myself, buddy. Pray for my baby.
Give up. I'm gonna call you carry belly for me, yo.
Me, myself, buddy. Pray for my baby.
Give up. Me, oh, you'll be fine, no more wrong. But then, your father is violent.
Oh, let me tell you.
Jumbo, jumbo, jumbo. We'll be fine, daddy, oh. Your mother is black, but she's a big character. Jumbo, jumbo, jumbo. I bet no bet for me, oh. Your father is violent.
Oh, let me tell you.
Jumbo, jumbo, jumbo. We'll be fine, mommy, oh. Your mother is black, but she's a big character. Jumbo, 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 I don't get so no more. Kamaka, you know, oh, oh. Come on, you're a yo. If your papa no want us to marry, your woman, oh, you, you, you. No, girl, I'm down for you, don't forget. The love me, I get it for you. Mama, no go compare.
Oh, be myself,
be myself.
For my
girl,
baby broke as long as you love me. Girl, I dare ya. Girl, I dare ya. Girl, I give up. No more wrong. But then, your father is violent. Jumbo, we'll be fine, mami. Oh, mother is black belt. Say it's a big character. Jumbo, I don't get so no more.
Stop.
likes it when I stay. She says she don't want me to go. She says I always make her day. Girl, would you be my lover? No. She says she really likes my style. Seems like she wants to take it slow. Do anything to make her smile. Girl, would you be my lover? No. What am I to do? Tired of running around chasing you. I can never think of replacing you. It's not you I define, baby, make up your mind. Hey, would you be my lover?
my money, yeah. Baby, come shake, make you shake. Girl, you got me losing it. That your sexy body sweet. I'll kiss your head down to your feet. Ah, yeah, 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 yeah.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. In the ongoing political campaign for the presidency of the United States, two politicians, Senator Bernie Sanders, who was the rival of Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary, and Donald J. Trump, the Republican nominee for the presidency, have made comments about the status of United States democracy. Senators Sanders and Trump have alleged that United States democracy and political system are rigged. Donald Trump had gone a stage further. Last Friday, he alleged that he could only lose the state of Pennsylvania, which is crucial to his victory in November, only if there were widespread rigging. More troubling, he added that the cheating would occur in a section of the state, meaning metropolitan area, where large numbers of African Americans reside. Political commentators in the United States have condemned these allegations, arguing that they would make United States election illegitimate. They have added also that such allegations are more familiar in third world countries where elections are not often legitimate. In my commentary last week regarding South Africa's municipal elections, I intimated that South African democracy was becoming more mature. I cited two characteristics in comparative political analysis to support that suggestion. One, ruling parties in mature democracy more often than not lose votes in midterm elections or municipal elections. What I should also have added was the fact that in that election, in a very crucial metropole, Nelson Mandela Bay constituency, there was an incident whereby while the county had completed, certain ballot boxes were found in questionable circumstances. Some supporters of the ANC wanted to use that to require a recounting of the votes. Luckily, wiser heads prevailed and the ANC accepted defeat and the results, a mark of mature democracy. Now look at what's happening in Zambia. In Zambia, a crucial election has just been held. But before the Electoral Commission could announce the results, supporters of the opposition party, UPND, alleged that the Electoral Commission was colluding with the governing party, PF, to change the voting results. What they never took into account is the fact that this is a more complex election in Zambia this time. Five different categories of votes were being taken, not only for the president, for parliament, for mayors, etc., etc. And that may account for the delays. I believe that it is time for African political class to realize that elections do have winners and losers, and that they should not continue to allege stuffing of ballots and rigging of ballots when there are no sufficient evidence. These things fester in the political community, and people have long, long memories about such rigging. We have had even cases where coups were lodged on the grounds that the election had been rigged. So this is a lesson which should be passed on in electoral education in many African countries. Otherwise, the world will see us as nothing more than third world democracy. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, the ever-friendly Michael Dubinsky, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, two waterfalls do not hear each other. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of the early and most significant changes made by the administration of President Barack Obama was the elevation of development as a key element of U.S. foreign policy on an even footing with diplomacy and defense. Among the top objectives of U.S. development policy was to achieve sustained and inclusive economic growth, democratic governance, game-changing innovations, leveraging new partners and multiple sources of development financing, and building sustainable systems to meet basic human needs. Instead of government going it alone, we've developed partnerships with multilateral organizations and civil society, and the private sector and faith communities, and most importantly, people on the ground. Instead of government just sending foreign aid, we're leveraging new sources of funding, committing and mobilizing more than $100 billion from the private sector and other partners to promote development and save lives. President Obama's signature development initiatives, such as Feed the Future and Power Africa, many of which build on programs begun by previous administrations, have marked tremendous successes, said President Obama.
We've saved over 60 million lives from measles and malaria and tuberculosis. We've slashed HIV/AIDS infections and deaths. Across the developing world, incomes have gone up. Tens of millions of boys and girls are in school. Millions have gained access to clean energy, helping to mitigate the threat of climate change. In just the past 25 years, more than 1 billion people have been lifted out of extreme poverty. 1 billion.
U.S. investment in global development is a key element of our foreign policy, not just because it helps improve the lives of millions of people, but also because it is crucial to global stability and therefore our own security, said President Obama. We know there's a correlation between no education and no jobs, no hope, the violation of basic human dignity, and conflict and instability. So development isn't charity. It's one of the smartest investments we can make in our shared future, in our security and our prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.